morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden. I'm here with co-host Sean Freeman.
Hello, good morning.
And once again, we're the guys that work at the Binary Research Institute in beautiful Newport Beach, California, near the UCI campus. And we investigate the possibility that ancient cultures may have had knowledge that was lost during the Dark Ages, and that we could, if we really study them, we can remember this knowledge and hopefully use it to make a better world today. And so in this quest, we look at ancient architecture, ancient literature, ancient mythology, modes of thought, anything that appears interesting. And the topic we're on now is higher states of consciousness. And one way to sort of understand this subject a little bit better is through lucid dreaming. And so our guest today is Robert Wagner, who wrote a book on lucid dreaming, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And this is part two of a talk that we kind of really got into, but just barely got into the part about ancient cultures. So in today's show, we'll focus on that. And so, Robert, at the end of the last show, you had mentioned that the ancient Egyptians had a word for dreaming, which is symbolized by the open eye, which sounds a little counterintuitive.
Right. It's quite interesting. So the word for dreaming is normally pronounced rezut or rezwit, and it translates as awakening or to come awake, and so the symbol was the open eye. So yeah, that seems a little bit odd, because lucid dreamers who become consciously aware of dreaming while in the dream state often think of lucid dreaming as coming awake or awakening within the dream. And so it's interesting that ancient Egyptians would use that sort of symbolism for the word dream.
Yeah, it's a revealing symbol. And whereas you mentioned in this piece that you sent me, Lucid Dreaming in the Ancients, that their word for sleep is symbolically pictured as a bed.
Right. So it was interesting that you could see that dreaming and sleep are two different concepts. Dreaming is to come awake, and if you're sleeping, you just symbolically picture that as a flat bed.
Yeah. You know, we study ancient Egypt a fair amount because we talk to so many authors that you know, have written books on it or give tours there and that sort of thing. And the ancient Egyptians were just beginning really to understand the depth of their language. And somebody was telling me the other day that they had over 60 words for heaven. And, you know, we have a few. We have heaven, cosmos, sky,
right?
But nothing like the Egyptians. And yet they didn't have a single word for religion.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you look at the Egyptians. They had some deep practices that I think that we would be lucky to have in our current age. Well, one of them was that they actually had a temple to the god Serapis, who was the god of dreams. And at these locations, they would have a place that they called the Serapeum, where people would come in order to be healed in the dream state or to get information in the dream state, where they'd come to incubate a dream. And later, this was carried on by the Greeks, when we think of Aesculapius and the temple at Epidaurus, where people who had illnesses came to have a dream and get healed. And so you can see that these ancient cultures really used dreaming very practically as a means of getting information and getting help. So they had a much deeper appreciation, I think, for it than we do in current times.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, I think the sort of the modern tendency is just, you know, all the emphasis is on the waking world, and Dreams are just, you know, sort of subconscious trash.
Right. You know, it's interesting that this Temple of Serapis, they had a particular elite group that was called the Learned Men of the Magic Library. And so not only did they get into dreams on just that kind of level of healing and getting information, but they had deeper groups that were much more deeper into dreams. And you got to think back during that time, there's no television, there were no telephones, there was none of those kind of electronic things that take up so much of our time. But the one thing that was curious was the dream state, because in dreams, people interact with the deceased dream figures, and they seem to get information about future events because time is a very nebulous sort of thing in the dream state. And so I really think the ancient Egyptians ventured into dreaming at a much deeper level than we normally do.
I wouldn't doubt it. You know, some of the stories about ancient cultures that come to us through the ancient sages of India talk about higher age cultures had an awareness of telepathy and clairvoyance that was lost during the Dark Ages. And we find this symbolized in some mythology and ancient scriptures, such as pre-Babel stories, when mankind spoke with one tongue and communed with nature, and then that ability was lost. And supposedly it will come back again, a few thousand years as mankind evolves, and telepathy and clairvoyance is once again common knowledge. But
it was interesting that. Actually, Sigmund Freud got involved a little bit with telepathy and what they called thought transference at the time. And in some of his writings, he wondered if telepathy wasn't the original archaic form of language, that this kind of transfer of mental images was at the basis of the root basis of language and all. But he said he was too busy trying to get psychoanalysis going, and he couldn't figure out a good model for telepathy. But he actually was quite interested in it, as was Carl Jung.
Oh, good. I now have a higher opinion of Freud. Yeah, it seems like it's something that's there, but it's sort of been pushed down in these relatively low ages we're in. But it's still somewhat alive and well on the dream level, because as you made reference to this magic library, and when you were describing how we can ask people for information, expected or unexpected, it is like a magic library.
Right, and that's what I really wonder, that if this Temple of Serapis that investigated dreaming, they didn't become consciously aware in the dream state and begin to get information. One reason I think this is a few years ago I was in Luxor and went to the temples at Edfu and Dendera. And as I was walking along, I began to see some strange hieroglyphics. Frequently you'd see hieroglyphics of like a mummy, and there'd be the ba as kind of a bird flying away from the mummy, so you kind of realize, okay, this is the person who's deceased. This is its spirit flying away.
Right, signifies what we call the soul, right?
Right, right, and the ball symbolizing by the soul. So, but then I began to see these images of a figure lying on bed, and so I knew it was sleeping, and also the figure had something interesting. It had an engorged private part, and I'll just use that kind of language. But what people
because
should realize
is... Because you don't want to say the word boner on the air.
Okay. But what people should realize is that during REM state, scientists have discovered 95% of the time men have an erection during REM state. And so by looking at this symbolic image, I think, okay, well, wait a second. This guy is laying in bed, and he's in the REM state because he has an erection. But also now I see his ba flying away. And so what that makes me think is someone who's either having an out-of-body experience or a lucid dream. So I began to think that in some of these temples, they actually showed people frequently had out-of-bodies and lucid dream-type experiences and were able to access information that way.
Okay, so the Ba then would be, is seen in hieroglyphs both over the sign where the person is sleeping in the bed, and it is also seen over a mummy. And so in one, they're signifying a lucid dreaming where the soul is conscious while in a sleep state, and the other, they're signifying that the soul is, I guess, leaving the body.
Right, it has passed on and gone on to its worldly awards. So it's quite interesting to think that they have this kind of visual artifact, but you begin to wonder, a lot of people don't know about lucid dreaming or don't believe in it or have very much experience with out-of-body experiences. And so you wonder if some of these hieroglyphic information is either mistranslated or kind of ignored as nonsensical.
Yeah, well, that's really not totally nonsensical, but misunderstood. You know, I just don't think that we are far enough along to really understand everything the Egyptians were talking about. And we have one of our speakers at this year's conference on Procession Ancient Knowledge is Catherine Denning. She's both an anthropologist and an archaeologist out of York University. And she studies, communication and sort of the mindset of ancient cultures. And she says, you know, it's really difficult to understand the other, whether we're talking about alien or very ancient culture or even an animal. They have a mindset that we have difficulty relating to.
Right, exactly. So it is hard to understand exactly what they're thinking, but when you start to put together some of these ideas that dream is translated as awakening or to come awake, it's symbolized as an open eye. We begin to see hieroglyphs of people who are asleep, but they're in the dream state, and also see their Ba flying away simultaneously. As you start to put all these pieces together, you really begin to wonder if these people didn't have a certain expertise in what we nowadays would call the out-of-body or lucid dream experience.
I'm sure you're right about that. And it used to be so much more integrated with everyday thinking, everyday life, versus it's so separated right now. I was reading... let's see, a book not long ago, they were talking about the ancient Greeks, that some of the great Greek scholars, this is sort of a Plato, Aristotle, Socrates era, brought forth these wonderful ideas like logic. And the Greeks themselves said they often got these things from dreaming or incubation. And today our scientists, revere the logic and the practicality parts of the science, but totally dismiss the idea that they might have come from incubation or dreams.
Right. A number of inventions have occurred in the dream state, and some that have involved medicine and manufacturing and science. But I think because nowadays we have devalued dreaming to such a large degree, we don't realize how much of our information comes to us during this subconscious state. And I think if we did, we would be much more like the ancient Egyptians and realize that there is something beyond this, that there was information that was accessible at some other level of awareness.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And we'd all be sleeping around a little bit more, too, just,
at least we'd learn how to use that sleep state to our greatest benefit and all.
Yeah.
But I remember there's a interesting story from St. Augustine back in 415 A.D., in which he talked about a physician in Carthage who had become a Christian and was wondering about how a person could be aware in the after-death state. And so this is one of the first recorded lucid dreams. This gentleman, Gennadius, he became consciously aware in the dream when he saw a dream figure that he had seen the night before, and this dream figure asked him, "Where have you seen me before?" And Gennadius goes, "Oh, I saw you in last night's dream." And so then the dream figure says, "So what's occurring to you now?" And he realizes that he's dreaming. And then the dream figure explains to him that after he dies, he'll be able to see with the same eyes that he's looking at this dream figure now, that in a sense that he'll have these mental eyes and have that faculty of perception, so he'll be able to perceive in the after-death state. But it is one of those kind of curious instances where a lucid dream helps a man understand what it would be like to be aware in the after-death state.
Yeah, and this is recorded where and when?
And so St. Augustine wrote this in 415 A.D. I know it's in one of Stephen LaBerge's books, probably Exploring the World of Lucid Dreaming. It's also in the book Our Dreaming Mind by Robert Van de Castle. And so it's in some of the ancient texts of St. Augustine.
Yeah, so this goes way, way, way back, yeah.
Yeah, so that's 1600 years ago.
Yeah, but I was reminded when you mentioned that, you know, many inventions nowadays and creative expressions have come from dreams of a story I read not long ago about the fellow that developed DNA. I think, is it Crick? Is that right?
Right.
And I guess he saw that strand first in a dream before the discovery.
You know, it's interesting. The gentleman who did the periodic tables saw the periodic tables in a dream and woke up and wrote it down and just needed to make one change. I think that was Dmitry Mendeleev. But there's been a number of scientific advancements that have occurred in dreams. In fact, Einstein says that he owes much of the theory of relativity to an interesting dream he had. Hmm. And so dreams have really impacted us historically and scientifically, but in today's culture, we're simply not getting the full benefit of dreaming and lucid dreaming.
Well, hopefully with books like Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self by Robert Wagner, that's all going to change somewhat.
I hope so.
Yeah.
So, Robert, I have a question. Is it possible then a lot of these inspirations may you awake right afterwards and you may not explicitly be lucid dreaming, but it could be still some kind of connection with that that reservoir of knowledge,
right,
where
right.
You have this experience. Maybe that's partly the gateway to lucid dreaming, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, I think any time you bring intent, and so if you go to sleep with the intention to resolve some issue or figure out something, any time you bring intent into that subconscious state, whether you're lucid or just a regular dream, chances are that you'll get an important response. The nice thing, though, about being lucid is that then you can consciously think about it. You can act, decide what you want to do, get more information if you don't understand and that sort of thing. But you're exactly right. You can just tell yourself before you go to sleep, tonight I'm going to dream about X and figure out that problem, and you'd be surprised what might occur. In fact, there's been some scientific studies where they've presented difficult problems to people and asked them to solve them, and then they've shown the same problems to other people and told them to think about it overnight and then come back the next day and solve it. And the people who were able to dream about it or sleep on it were 30% more likely to come up with the correct response. And so there's just something about that nocturnal state that allows our creative mind greater access and greater ability.
Profound. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. We're back at Cosmic Influence, talking with Robert Wagner, author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And we're talking mostly about dreaming in ancient cultures. And Robert, you talked a little bit about, or wrote a little bit about ancient Buddhists and their views and thoughts about dreams. Can you address that a little bit?
Yes, you know, there was actually a group in Tibet called the Bon who predate Buddhism. And so they say that this indigenous or shamanic tradition of Bon has existed for 18,000 years. One interesting thing about it is, even though they've been incorporated into Buddhism now, some of their scholars are the ones who are talking about dream yoga or becoming consciously aware in the dream state as a path to enlightenment. But they're one of the kind of leading proponents of lucid dreaming as a spiritual practice. People can read this in the works of Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche. He has an excellent book called The Tibetan Yogas of Dream and Sleep. Mm-hmm. But so you have to realize that under their tradition, they seem to suggest that for the last 10,000 years, their tradition has been practicing becoming consciously aware in the dream state. And you really realize that these ancients who, especially the ancient mystics and religious and spiritual seekers of the time, oftentimes would share information from culture to culture, that if this Bon group says they've been doing it for 10,000 years, that it probably had spread across the Mideast as well as into Egypt and down into India. So it's quite interesting to look at their viewpoint on lucid dreaming.
I'll say. You had a quote here. I'm trying to read as I'm listening to you. This is by from Opening the Door to Bon.
Right.
Yungdrung Bon, the root culture and religion of Tibet, originated from the teachings of Tonpa Shenrab, I don't know if I'm saying that right, who was born in a completely pure and spiritual land named Tagzig Olmo Lungring, which is beyond the impure nature of this existing world, end quote. That's so beautiful that, you know, when you read the Greek mythology, the mythology handed down through other cultures about the very higher ages, it's always framed in this language, completely pure and spiritual land.
Right, and it's interesting, this enlightened being, this Tampa Shinrab, according to their tradition, he lived for 82 years in this pure land of Olmo Lungring. But that equated to 8,200 years in the waking world. And so he transmitted all of this spiritual knowledge to their tradition, and part of that was the practice of dream yoga. So you realize that from their viewpoint, that this is something that's very powerful. It comes from a very deeply spiritual origin. And it is, according to the Buddhists like Naropa, lucid dreaming or dream yoga is one of the six paths to enlightenment. And so they take it very seriously. It's interesting, in talking to this author, Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche, he grew up in a Buddhist monastery in India where he was taught dream yoga as an intensive practice for 3 years. And he told me that in some of the classes occurred in the dream state. Wow. That if you were not consciously aware in the dream state and at the dream class, that the next day in waking reality, the other class members would make fun of you for not being there. And he was totally dead serious that the lessons were learned in the dream state.
Okay, well, this is too fascinating. So I have to ask you, in your research with over 1,000 lucid dreams, what's the research about hooking up with other people?
You know, in my book, I have a chapter on mutual lucid dreams where you try to become consciously aware and then find another consciously aware lucid dreamer. Oftentimes, though, instead of finding another consciously aware person, you find someone who appears to be a dreamer that you know, and you can tell that they're dreaming because they seem so unaware. They kind of have this drunken sailor look about them. So I'll give you an example. One time I was consciously aware in the dream state. I'm sitting in this kind of restaurant bar, consciously aware. In walks my friend Mo, who lives in the Bay Area. And she comes walking in, and I go up to her, and I go, Mo, this is a dream. We're lucid dreaming. But she has this look on her face like she can't focus. Her head moves to side to side. She just has that kind of drunk look of someone who's not totally aware. And so I lift her up, and I start to levitate. So I levitate up 5 or 10 feet, and I go, look, Mo, we're floating. Do you see? This is a lucid dream. But she still doesn't have that kind of look of awareness on her face. And so finally I got frustrated, and I made a peace sign, and I put it right in her face, right in front of her eyes. And I go, Mo, you see this peace sign? Every time you see it, you can use it to become consciously aware. And then I decided to wake up. So I didn't tell her about this lucid dream, and about 3 months later, I was in the Bay Area on a business trip, and I called up Mo to see if she wanted to get together for lunch. So anyway, here in waking reality, I'm standing outside the restaurant, and Mo's coming, walking down the sidewalk. She comes walking up to me, and all of a sudden, right as she gets up to me, she shoves a peace sign right in front of my face. And I go, Mo, why are you doing that? And she goes, I don't know. I just felt like it. So this peace sign that I had showed her in the lucid dream, when she didn't seem like she could consciously focus, she acted like a drunken sailor, somehow she picked it up on some other level and shoved it in my face 3 months later when we met in waking reality.
Yeah, just a
little.
So
you begin to see that in some of these cases, the lucid dreamer appears to be able to affect waking reality and actually get across information to other people. If you read my chapter on mutual lucid dreams, you'll see that there's been some instances of two lucid dreamers apparently passing on information when consciously aware in the dream state. So when Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche, the Buddhist from the Bon tradition, tells me that some of these classes were held in the dream state, I feel that he's giving me a true recollection of what they expect and what they do in the dream yoga intensive.
I would say so. And that peace sign is just a beautiful little symbol of, hey, I got it, at least on the subconscious level. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. Robert, we were talking a little bit about some of the Buddhist traditions there. I also understand from your writings that there are some shamanic traditions in other cultures, Indian cultures. And can you mention a little bit about that?
Right. I think when anyone begins to investigate indigenous knowledge or shamanic knowledge, oftentimes they'll come across reports of shamans who are either having a lucid dream experience or an out-of-body experience. They're having something like that because of the actions that they do and the awareness that they have during these nocturnal experiences. Now, one thing that I've thought has been very interesting for me is oftentimes when I've gone to places that Native Americans consider very powerful, I've had lucid dreams that were kind of beyond the norm, that were extraordinary. One example, 5 or 6 years ago, my wife and I floated down the Grand Canyon. So we're on one of those 7-day trips where you sleep out under the stars in the Grand Canyon as part of a tour. And so what happened to me on the second night of my trip in the Grand Canyon, I became lucidly aware when I saw this strange woman who I'd seen the night before, and it seemed like her daughter. And I became lucidly aware, and she approached me and told me some things and had a very interesting lucid dream.
And this is a dream you were having when you're just sleeping on the beach of the Grand Canyon or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I became consciously aware because I'd seen this person twice. And oftentimes you'll find in some of these power places that when the Native Americans would talk about a spirit or a spiritual being that occupied the place, frequently you'll find lucid dreamers who will have interesting dreams, and they'll report a figure that the locals think of as the spirit who occupies that place. And so that in and of itself is quite interesting. But what happened the second night really blew my mind. I became consciously aware, and then I seemed to be within the Grand Canyon, and I saw this incredible towering red light. So imagine a red light this kind of red dome of light that's, 40,000 feet and 10,000 feet across. It was this huge red dome of light. And later on, when I got back from this trip, I started to investigate what is it about the Grand Canyon. And in many of the Native American traditions, they say that this portion of the Grand Canyon that I was in, and just west of there where I saw this red dome of light, was where they emerged into this world. This is kind of the hole between the previous world and entering this world.
So this is one of the Hopi or Navajo or what the Indians of the area, their belief?
Right. It's actually the tribal beliefs of many various tribes from the southwestern U.S. And so I found this in other times when I've gone to Native American places that were either council gathering spots that now the local tribe had built a motel on or something like that, that I'd have some incredibly powerful lucid dream experiences, and oftentimes one in which I would meet a figure that seemed to be more consciously aware than I am. And that's one curious thing that occurs in some lucid dreams, is you'll meet a figure who seems more aware than you are, and that's when you begin to wonder, how deep you've gone into lucid dreaming.
Ooh, yeah. I've had only a few of those, but one where I was in this beautiful, beautiful house, and I was just so aware that of all the details, and everything was so rich, and there was a person there, actually my Param Guru, and he was standing behind a globe, and he was teaching me something. And while in the dream, I could understand him completely. Upon waking, I couldn't remember the words, but I noticed in my life that it was right after that point that I embarked on this whole mission I'm on now to explore ancient cultures.
It's really fascinating, and for myself, something incredible happened as I finished my book. So I finished my book, sent it off to the editor, was being proofread and all this, and I've been having all these dreams of getting gifts while I was writing it. And in the final series of gifting dreams, a Chinese Buddhist gave me an ancient turquoise and carnelian necklace. And in the process of doing that, the room exploded in kind of all this purple color. Anyway, I wrote a friend of mine about this, who's a Vedic astrologer, and he wrote me back and he said, Chinese Buddhist, I'm hosting a Chinese Buddhist here in the Bay Area soon. And he sent me the link, and it was this guy.
Oh.
And as soon as I clicked on that link and saw this guy's face, it was exactly his face that I'd seen in this gifting dream. And then I realized that he had been reoccurring in my dreams for the last 20 years. I'd been having this guy reappear. Oftentimes he'd give me advice in the dream state, or he'd comment on my dreams from the night before. But it was utterly fantastic and totally blew my mind to think that this recurring dream figure actually existed in physical reality.
So did you go see him in the waking world?
I went to see him in the waking world, and it was truly an awesome experience because he is the leader of an esoteric Buddhist tradition and the Chinese version of the Zen Buddhist tradition, and very, very adept and spiritually seasoned, so to speak. So it's amazing what you experience and in these states, and if you begin to take dreaming seriously and pursue it deeply.
Yeah, that reminds me of the story of the devotee in of Lahiri Mahashai, mentioned in the book Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, where he's requesting the next yoga initiation, and his guru comes to him in his dream, where he is initiated, but he doesn't accept that as reality. So he goes and sees his guru the next day and says, "Okay, I'm here, ready for initiation." And his guru says, "I initiated you last night in a dream. What more do you want?" Or something to that effect.
You know, it's interesting. Now, among experienced lucid dreamers, you'll hear stories of initiations, and it's really quite incredible. And that's why I want to get across to people that lucid dreaming and also just deep dreaming is much more powerful than we normally in the current culture give it credit for.
I believe you. Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back. You'd mentioned that you had a dream at Flathead Lake in Montana at a Best Western motel that was on Native American land. Tell me about that.
Right. If you go there on the south shore of Flathead Lake, just right there by the Rockies, they have a Best Western motel that's called Quatocknock. And I'm not exactly sure of what tribe it was that used that as council grounds. I want to say the Blackfeet, but I'm not exactly sure, so I don't want to be quoted on that. But anyway, we went there, spent a night, and that night I had another one of these lucid dreams that was incredibly powerful and memorable. But I'm not going to tell you about it. But my main point in just bringing this up is that some of these places, a person might say it's just all suggestion and expectation that if you expect to have a powerful dream at a powerful place, then you do. But I do believe that there are some of these places that, for whatever reason, have more energy, have a higher level of consciousness accessible at those places than what the norm is. And so, I encourage people to pay attention to their dreams whenever they go to some of these places that have been noted for greater spiritual energy.
You know, that makes sense. If we have sort of sacred places in the body, chakras, things like that, you know, why wouldn't the body of the earth have certain sacred places where, you know, it's possible to tap into elevated states of consciousness? I like it.
You really wonder if there aren't some places that just, for some reason, have an opening to more spiritual power than most places.
Yeah. Well, that's a topic we sometimes touch on here, and one we'll try to get into a little more in the future. You had also mentioned in your article here something about the Sufis and lucid dreaming.
Right. So the Sufis are the mystical tradition of Islam, and they've actually have some fascinating ideas about the dream as an imaginal realm and kind of a bridge between waking reality and spiritual reality is this imaginal reality, and we access this imaginal reality in dreaming. And so one of the leading scholars from about 800 years ago was this gentleman, Ibn al-Arabi, who was born in Spain, but was really considered one of the greatest masters at explaining Sufi thought, and also seemed to be deeply interested in the dream state. And so he said that as a person developed, or as a dreamer developed in their awareness and knowledge, that oftentimes that they would become consciously aware in the dream state. And he considered this another area of growth potential for the person, because for him, this imaginal realm of dreams was actually closer to the light, or kind of closer to the light of God, And so actually the waking world is further away from God, and the imaginal realm of dreams is actually a closer realm, closer world than this. So it's quite interesting that even in, here's another religious tradition that explores lucid dreaming and dreaming in a very thoughtful, intentional way, and sees the value in it.
And very consistent with ancient Buddhist beliefs, ancient Egyptian beliefs, as you've mentioned. Yes.
Right, and also to some degree similar to the shamanic traditions that you find with the indigenous people. They're not all exactly the same, but you start hearing the same themes over and over of getting forward-looking precognitive information, of being in telepathic correspondence with other people, of getting unknown information, ideas for inventions, advice and all. And you begin to see that ancient people really utilized the dream state in ways that nowadays we've more or less forgotten, except in rare instances.
Yeah. Well, it's an excellent book you've written on the subject here, Robert. I wanted to mention a few quotes. Christine Lemley, executive producer, Dreamtime series on PBS, said, "Robert Wagner's unique storytelling style is compelling reading and impressive exploration of the subject. The work is scholarly, fascinating, and most of all, practical." And I'll add to that, just a great read.
Thanks, Walter. And, you know, I just want to encourage people to try lucid dreaming. Just some simple techniques. If you go to my website, dreaminglucid.com, and look on the left side, I have a place called Incubating Lucid Dreams. And there you can see five simple, successful techniques on how to become consciously aware while in the dream state.
Good. Well, we will encourage people to do that. And we have just a couple minutes here left. You know, one of the most fascinating things you mentioned was this idea of, you know, mutual lucid dreaming or contacting others, which really, to me, signals that, you know, we're much more than these completely separate bodies walking around here on Earth. I'm curious what your own personal philosophy is after, you know, all of this lucid dream experience.
You know, I end my final chapter of the book by titling it The Unified Self in a Connected Universe. And I tell a story from that trip on the Grand Canyon. My wife and I had gone with the group, and we stopped at Havasu Canyon, which is where the beautiful waterfalls are. And so we climbed up with the entire group all the way up, and we're sitting in this stream. And so I was sitting there thinking that all of nature is sacred, conscious, and alive. And so therefore I asked the canyon, I go, "Canyon, what do you have to say to me now?" And I heard clear as day, "Get out while you still can." And so I thought that was a really weird thing to hear, and I wondered if I was sitting on a plant or hurting something, a rock or something, and I kind of looked around to see if I was hurting anything, and I got kind of meditative again after 3 or 4 minutes, and I asked the canyon, "So, Canyon, what do you have to say to me now?" And it said the same thing, "Get out while you still can." But this time it sounded more insistent. So I stood up in this water and told my wife and the other people there, we got to leave. We got to get out of here. And my wife goes, "Why?" And I go, "I don't know why." And it was probably a minute later that I looked through this slot canyon and saw the leading edge of a thunderstorm. And then I realized why we had to get out of there. There was going to be a flash flood.
Uh-huh.
And so we got everyone out of there. The crew came up from the boat yelling at everyone to get out of there. There's going to be a flash flood. And we all got back to the boat just in time for the heavens to open up and to and for a flash flood to begin all around the Grand Canyon.
Wow. Well, unfortunately, we have to get out of here right now, too, Robert. So
okay.
It's been great having you on the show. This is Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. So this has been a great show, and I thank you, Robert, for being on it and talking about your book, Lucid Dreaming. And once again, we encourage people to visit your website, or better yet, just go to Amazon and buy the book. Thank you so much, Robert.
Thanks, Walter and Sean. It's been a lot of fun. And I just encourage everyone to go more deeply into their dreaming life and really explore it.
That we will do.
Fantastic.
Thanks again. And to all listeners, just a reminder, CPAC is coming up. Please register online at cpakonline.com. And we hope to see you all in the fall, October 10th at UCI. And in the meantime,
bring on the higher ages.